Hey guys, welcome or welcome back to the channel McNally Money, the new home of Power Mining Analysis. In today's episode, Anthony Power and I are going to be joined by the CEO of Griffin Digital Mining, Rob Chang, to give us an update on this company, go through their earnings from last year, and their recently announced March production results. Now, this is the first time we've had Rob and Griffin on the channel, so we've got a lot to go through. But before we do, please take a second, hit the like button, you guys. It's 100% free to do. Anthony loves it, and it's a big help to the channel. If you're not already subscribed, McNally Money, feel free to join. And let us know in the comments section below if you're currently holding shares of Griffin, how you think they stack up to some of the other miners we cover on the channel, and your outlook for 2024. Now, with that being said, let's get into today's interview. Okay, guys, so that's right. Today's video, for the first time ever, we've got Rob Chang, the president, director, and CEO of Griffin Digital Mining on the program. Rob, thanks so much for being here. Really excited to talk to you today and learn all about Griffin Digital Mining.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on.
Now, we haven't forgot Anthony here, Rob. We've brought him along as well, our resident Bitcoin mining analyst. He's up here beside me with our new background. It's looking great. So we'll get into a lot of questions here. I know your March results just came out. We also want to talk about earnings. But first things first, because it's your first time here, and for people who maybe aren't super familiar with Griffin, can you give us just a background on yourself and kind of a high-level summary of the company?
Absolutely. So background for myself, prior to doing anything Bitcoin, 15 some odd years in the investment banking, particularly the research world. I was the most recently managing director, head of metals and mining at Cantor Fitzgerald, covering traditional mining. So I think one of the few guys who've done mining both the dirty way out of the ground and the clean way with machines. When I was doing that, I was focusing on precious metals, uranium. I was actually quite well known for uranium, and I'm now on two uranium boards because of it. As a side note, in Q1 2016, Bloomberg named me the top precious metals analyst. So no commodities pretty well. What made me change over was in 2017, one of my more respected fund managers that I worked with in London, actually, had a 1% allocation in Bitcoin. And I thought, well, that's crazy. What it did, though, was it forced me to go down the rabbit hole and understand Bitcoin and realize, wow, this is going to change the world. And what happened then was I reminded myself of a promise I made when I was a teenager. When I was a teenager, I saw the internet show up. I saw how the world changed. And I told myself, the next time something world-changing happens, drop everything and do it. And so I stepped up to that promise. Just so happened was in around 2018, one of my investors, another one, was behind Riot Blockchain, which was the first publicly traded miner on the NASDAQ. And they said they were looking for a CFO, wanted to come down. So flew down, got the job on the spot, and away I went. Parachute onto the top of the hill of the largest publicly traded Bitcoin mine for quite a while. It wasn't all roses during that time, as some people know. Riot, of course, is a giant now, but it did have some struggles being the first miner. There were a lot of arrows pointed at it, so had an opportunity to learn the Bitcoin mining space and the regulatory space and all sorts of other stuff during the time as my CFO, being the CFO there. But anyway, fast forward a little bit. I decided instead of being the CFO, I wanted to be the CEO. And so I looked for opportunities, did some consulting work, had a good stopover with the folks at Hive, and worked with the good folks over there, and ran into a group of people who wanted to build a Bitcoin miner exactly the way I wanted to. And Griffin Digital Mining is the result. And really, the proof is in the pudding. I'm going to talk about that now. We always wanted to run originally a very cost-focused Bitcoin miner that was blue chip styled. And so for the blue chip style, let me talk in reverse. I want to build a team of people that everyone would respect and trust, and it's not a guy who shows up and tries to pump a stock type of profile. So if you look at my executive team, it's Riot and Marathon guys. I'm former Riot. My CFO, Sim, was former Marathon. My chief technical advisor, Chris, is former Riot and worked with me. So we rebuilt the band and really have exit with the experience that we have. And then on top of that, it's really just a focus on the cost control. We really focus on paybacks when we do purchases and any type of decisions. So when we first joined, the market was hot in 2021. It made way more sense for us to host rather than buy facilities, because facilities were super expensive. Everyone was falling over themselves buying. And I went through that experience when I was at Riot, where we started building a facility when Bitcoin was at 13, hit 17, and then on way down. And then when we finally turned it on, it was at 7 going down to 3, and our break even was at 3. So sorry, our bakery income was 7. So we were not actually making money that whole time. And that was a great experience. Anyway, I ramble. And so anyway, with Griffin, the big focus for us is efficiencies and cost savings. And that's what we focused on. And I think we've been doing that so far.
Yeah, that's a good point, Rob. And you mentioned the likes of Marathon Digital and Riot Platforms in that conversation. And those are the first two miners to list on the NASDAQ. And now you're part of that group. You've listened to NASDAQ recently. Moving on to like the earnings side of things, and then you've just released earnings. Can you give us some sort of like the highlights of the earnings that just came out recently?
So we're very happy about that. Our earnings, we generated 739 Bitcoin during the year. The value of that was just over 21 million. And the earnings, well, there's a key thing. Focusing on adjusted EBITDA is more important than looking at net income because a lot of it's non-cash. So if you look at adjusted EBITDA, we're in the $4 million range and the high $4 million range, which is what really matters because cash is really the more important part of it. What we're really focused on and really happy about, though, is our costs. It cost us $18,200 per Bitcoin on a full cash basis. And I think that's really important to focus on. And that's what we're trying to drive the market towards looking at is I've noticed sometimes people will pick metrics that, of course, make themselves look better. And so they'll just focus on electricity, for example, which will be a fraction of the cost, a large portion of total, but just a fraction. Whereas as a former mining analyst, you really need to look at the total cost of operations. And that's why we're reporting things about it in that way. So 18,200, which is, I think, fairly solid and probably the top grouping. And even if you can't account for the halving, which we're probably going to talk about later, you theoretically double that at 36. We're still doing great because Bitcoin's around 70. So very, very excited about that. And of course, our efficiency for that for the past year, we were number one 6 out of the 12 months based on the metrics that we looked at, and so we're very excited about that. And we're looking to continue that as we grow now that we're a publicly listed company.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we had Paul Prager on from TerraWolf recently on the podcast, and one thing he said was, you know, get CEOs up on here and tell us what their cost to earn a Bitcoin is, and he articulated a similar sort of scenario in the fact that, you know, and it's not unusual where miners will sort of, you know, choose the metric that makes them stand out. And that's just normal culture that, you know, we all at some time want to sort of maybe slightly, you know, embellish what, you know, the way we are sometimes. But it's great that you've come on and articulated that number there. And that sets down a market for everyone else to follow now. I mean, I saw that, you know, and like many people saw the Cantor Fitzgerald update earlier in January, looking at the Bitcoin mining space. And when they suggested the Bitcoin price would be about 40,000 at the halving, and there's only literally, I think, two miners who could still operate post the halving. But, you know, how things can change very quickly. And we're now looking at sort of 67,000 plus today in Bitcoin. It seems to be holding that pattern quite nicely. That gives a lot of, you know, a lot of comfort to some miners, you know, especially the ones that the North American listed miners, the big players in this space, to get through that halving, you know, without sort of having to, you know, start switching off. It gives everyone a leap. Having a price of 18,200 you're quite right. That's going to be sort of like top level in terms of a low cost production. Very good.
Yeah, and I'm proud of my old shop that did that. And yes, thank you for recognizing that. We would have been the third company that would have been okay based on those metrics.
Well, good thing we all didn't go out of business when that Cantor Fitzgerald came out. Hey, everyone, pack up shop. Now, very strong cost per coin. That's actually something at Power Mining Analysis we're working on kind of standardizing in the industry, Rob, is getting that all-in cash cost per coin using the same standard between all the companies, right? So appreciate that. That leads into the next question pretty nicely, actually, around your fleet efficiency upgrade plans. Very aggressive growth targets for you guys, going from 0.9 exahash out to 10 exahash is the eventual milestone. Very ambitious target, Rob. You talk about your experience and bringing a lot of these key members from other teams. How do you guys plan on executing on that growth target?
Yeah, it's a great question, and to be very clear on that, it is a target. There are no set plans yet in place, but what we have been doing is we're looking at the landscape, and we believe it's something that's possible. Now, it will take a little bit of good timing and maybe a little bit of luck, but based on the opportunities that we see and how we foresee the market unfolding, if it unfolds like any other halving period where the market just rips right after, there's going to be a lot of availability of capital that would also facilitate that. So there's a few things that work. But the key thing for us is that we have a two-phase approach in our growth strategy that we think we can do this with. First off, and our big focus right now is M&A. And so we're looking at a lot of particularly private miners that are in a situation where they have facilities, they have machines, but they don't have access to capital, given that they're private. And they've now realized that more likely than not, investors are probably going to put their money towards a public miner because they can trade out of it, as opposed to a private one where they're locked in. And they've realized by especially looking at our example that it takes quite a while to go public. So if you started the process now or even started 6 months ago, it's probably going to be too late because it took us 2 years. And so it's nuts. It's not as quick as people think, especially because we're Bitcoin mining. And so they've realized that if they want to participate in the upside of the upcoming Bitcoin wave that we're going to probably see, is their best choice is to take equity and fold into a Bitcoin miner. And so they have choices of either folding into a large mega guy like Marathon, where they'll be a drop in the bucket and probably be handed their cash and asked to leave. Or with us, there'd be an opportunity possibly to work with us and grow with us. And so we think we present a very attractive opportunity for anyone who's private to get into the equity, the public side, and be a meaningful part of us as well. And we'd be happy to have them. And so there's that. And if you look around, you could, they're of their varying sizes. Some of them are half an exahash. Some of them are two exahash, three exahash. So if I sweep up two or three of these, I can get to 3 to 5 exahash pretty quick. And then on top of that, if I do all of them, I could even get larger. And then on top of that, at some point, not here, we would look to raise capital. And at that point, it's just going to be buy machines and like the traditional way that we're used to seeing. And you can easily do 2 to 5 exahash if you have enough capital. You just need to find a facility, which we've always had a portfolio that we've looked at. I've been doing this since 2018, and I've never stopped looking for facilities and keeping in contact. So there's always a roster of them. It's really more a matter of picking them off the shelf and picking whatever the best one at the time is when we do make that call. So that's our strategy. We don't have anything official yet, but that is our plan. But what I think it does highlight for us, though, is that the scale that we think at, it's kind of like the Kobe Bryant way of thinking in terms of thinking like a champion. And what it really is we're not looking to only grow by 1 exahash or trying to double. We are trying to get really big, really fast, legitimately. And so we're putting it out there. We might miss it. Chances are we probably will, given that is a big, like 10x more than. But that's the way we think here at Griffin, and that's what we're going to try to pull off.
Who's Kobe Bryant, Rob?
Oh, just some guy who played basketball.
I'm joking.
Well, you got to dream big, and it reminds me of the book 10X, Rob. Yeah, it's nice to have those huge ambitions, and I think your timing is nice now that you've come on the public markets. You've got access to that capital right going into halving. Anthony and I just put out a video about halving, and our prediction was a lot of the acquisition or M&A targets are going to be private as well, so that really follows suit with that assumption or thesis.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the halving in a previous podcast, and you know, efficient miners, low cost energy, strong balance sheet. So, from a balance sheet perspective, how do you feel your position at the moment going into the halving?
I think we're fine. As we reported, we're around 4 to 5 million of Bitcoin and cash, which doesn't sound like too much. But one thing I'd like to highlight is that we've never had a single month where we haven't been operationally cash flow positive. So it's not as if we're burning anything that we're worried about. It's really just all what capital we're using to deploy. And as you might have noticed in our earnings announcement today, we actually announced a small upgrade of our machines. So we are using that capital to improve our machine, improve the efficiency, and grow a little bit at the same time, while looking for the large, big swings and big opportunities to grow. And so that's what we're looking at is we intentionally are not going to super, let me say this, I'm not going to hold Bitcoin just for the sake of holding Bitcoin, because we don't think that's a good use of capital, and we can certainly go down that rabbit hole. But I will actively look to use that to grow the company, and we've been doing that.
Amazing. Now, next question. We actually, part of the reason we wanted to do this interview today was because we just got your March production results as well, Rob, and because it's your first time on the program, we thought that'd be really strong in combination with earnings. So I wanted to shift gears there. Now talk about your March production results. Obviously, the most recent month we've had. You have just over 60 Bitcoin on the balance sheet. So talk to us about that HODL strategy you just referenced and what you were able to achieve in March.
Yeah, so let's start with what we achieved in March and go into the HODL. So in the month of March, we generated 45 Bitcoin, which based on the average value of Bitcoin around that time, so 3.1 million. Hash rate was 912 at the end of the month, although we did announce that we'll be growing, so it will be about 935 probably next week, because we expect to receive the machines that quickly. Joules per terahash was 28.9, which will go down to 28.5 pretty soon. And of course, as you mentioned, the treasury is what it does. And so the goal for us for Bitcoin, for holding Bitcoin, is that we see it as capital. And whether we hold Bitcoin or not, it's really more of our view on Bitcoin. We do not marry ourselves to the HODL strategy. And the reason is why. The reason is this. As a former commodity guy, and that's the reason why I mentioned so much about it before, is that from my experience in the mature commodity industries, and I consider Bitcoin a commodity, no one in the big, in the gold mining space, copper, uranium, silver mining space, diamonds, whatever, holds the asset that they make, because there are other better opportunities for an investor to invest in that separate from the company itself. It doesn't make sense. There's gold ETFs. There are gold physical, as just the same. There is Bitcoin wallets you can put your Bitcoin into. You can buy Bitcoin ETFs. You can buy MicroStrategy's MicroStrategy. By buying a Bitcoin miner for its Bitcoin holdings, you're also paying for operations, G&A, marketing, salaries, all sorts of stuff that you don't need to pay for. On top of that, if for some reason the Bitcoin mining operation fails or does something very poor, you are now forced to sell the entire position, which means you sell your Bitcoin investment because they're both tied together. Whereas if you had it separated out, you could still hold on to your Bitcoin position and your ETFs or whatever and sell the miner who is now underperforming. So it just doesn't make sense, and it's an inefficient way of doing so. I think the reason why this is the case is the legacy of the fact that there were no options before, and also the fact that this is a very retail heavy driven space, and retail investors haven't realized yet that there are more effective ways to hold their Bitcoin investment if their sole purpose is to hold Bitcoin. But for us, again, we look at it as an investment, not an investment, sorry. We look at it as just working capital, and I'll illustrate the example of what we did. During the last cycle, when Bitcoin was shooting up to high 60s, and then started pulling back. When Bitcoin hit 47, we made the decision to sell every Bitcoin we mined, and we did that all the way down. And I think most of our peers held because they had HODLs, and most of them ended up selling in the 20s because you saw a big rush out during that time, and because many of them who had US dollar loans started going upside down in their whole deal. And some really struggled after that. So for us, we sold all the way down, hit 13-ish. On the way back up, once it hit 17, we decided to do what we're doing now, which is hold all excess Bitcoin that's above our costs. So on every month, we sell the Bitcoin we need to pay for our US dollar costs, because we don't believe in raising equity just to pay for operations. That's what Bitcoin's there for. And then we hold the excess, and we'll make the call when we see it. And fully recognize this is a bit of, we've been lucky. We like to say we're good, but there's also some luck involved for calling it right these times. We're not gonna be cavalier about it. So at the right time, we'll probably develop some hedging strategies just to control the volatility.
Yeah, it's a good point, Robin. And it seems that you in a very similar pattern we saw with Paul from Terrible Fig, exactly the same, and that and other miners as well. I can't wait to get the likes of Frank Holmes from Hive Digital on, because he was actually in the gold space as well as mining space. So it'd be interesting to see his stance, because they are trying to hodl all the way through now the halving. And so we want that sort of that other. I'm not one side or the other. I mean, you've articulated really well, and miners have done that on both sides. But it'd be interesting to see what Frank's position is, because he's obviously got a wealth of experience as well in this yes. sector, and in the gold sector and in the airline sector. But from gold and Bitcoin, he's probably the go-to person who understands those businesses probably better than most people. So we'll get him on the show and give the opposite argument, and see if he can articulate it as well as you guys have done for actually, the benefit of using the HODL. And Dan Roberts, we hope to get him on the channel in probably April as well, where, he's been very much similar background to yourself in terms of working for these investment companies, and, understands commodities, better than most people, from a financiers background. And so, they're very much a sell every day since they started operating. So they sold all the way up to 69,000, all the way down. And that helped them build what they've got at the moment. So there's definitely merits to both. But I'll get a CEO on that gives the opposite argument, just to give people an understanding from their position as well. But yeah,
and good point. I do have to say, Rob, I'm more on the HODL side of the fence, but of everyone we've discussed, that was a very succinct, direct, well-explained position you have. And I think that background as a commodity or commodities experience, right, with all those other precious metals and uranium and copper and all the rest, does give you a very unique and comprehensive outlook on that situation. So I will give you credit there where it's due. And I'm glad that you were able to sell when Bitcoin was doing well last cycle. But like you say, nobody knows the price of Bitcoin tomorrow, and definitely a little bit of risk there for sure. Now, Rob, we've come to the end of our questions from the subscribers, from the audience, but because it is your first time, I wanted to just pitch it back on you and really give you the opportunity to tell people why should they look at Gryphon compared to some of the other miners or ETFs or Michael Saylor's MicroStrategy as an investment opportunity.
Yeah, and thank you for that. So what I'd like to present it as is how we've built the company. You are possibly, and I like to say we are doing, giving investors the opportunity to buy the Riot and Marathon when it was what it was 4 or 5 years ago. because that's the same teams that are doing it, and we are basically repeating the playbook, but also doing the things that I thought were mistakes. Sorry, fixing the things that I thought were mistakes back then. And as a result, as I mentioned, we are very strong on efficiency. We're very low on costs. And we've been outperforming most peers doing that as the new player, but with old people. And so, and that's one of the key things, is that it's a blue chip team focused on cost control. We have not built this company to pump the stock price. I could have had a much higher hash rate a long time ago if I went crazy and did those crazy loan deals where I was paying close to 20% interest rates and getting 2 or 3x a hash. But those are also the same companies that really struggle during the down period, and some don't exist anymore. And so that's what you're getting. And I think that's what the industry needs. I'm former buy side, former sell side. And you see this in every hot industry. Cannabis, uranium did it for a while, Bitcoin mining, AI will probably do it, where you have two types of companies that run. One are the ones that hop in and find the metric that is the most valued by really the retail investor. They pump that up as much as possible and get gigantic valuations, and then these guys sell and get out. The other ones are the ones that last longer, the ones that have been doing it, quote unquote, the right way, and have been good operations, low cost, no bloat. Like, we only have 3 employees, for example. And we want to build a company that people will look at after everything settles, after the downturn, and say, hey, these guys have been doing it right the whole time. They didn't try to pump the stock, so we're not going to worry that they're that type of company. And they've just been doing it the right way. And so that's what we're doing now. The key thing for us now is that we are now a publicly listed company as of February. And so the opportunities for us to grow using our stock are immense. And we're looking forward to growing really aggressively using that as our new opportunity. Because as a private, you are handcuffed, unless you have some person with really deep pockets willing to fund everything. Which is very rare, unless you have a really sovereign nation behind you or something like that. it's more difficult. So now that we are out on the street executing, we're giving investors the opportunity to basically ground floor what used to be the team, what was a team for Riot and Marathon. The other part I really want to focus on is something that hasn't been talked about as much, but I think is something that will become more relevant once the heat in the market returns, which is the reason why it happened last time, which is the whole focus on carbon neutrality, ESG. We are a leader in that space. We are 100% renewable, not even carbon neutral. We're not using financial gymnastics to do what we're doing. It is entirely hydropower for us, for scope in 1 and 2, and that's independently verified by third parties. And that's the other key thing, is that we've gone through the additional step of doing that. We've even published our full reports, and they're online now, so everyone can go through it. That is a very different story relative to others who are moving from, I'm making these numbers up, but 80% carbon emitting to 70% carbon emitting, declaring victory and calling themselves green, because there's no real regulations on it. So there's that type of stuff happens, and we are offering full third-party independent transparency to show that. And then on top of that, the last thing I'd like to say is we're also actually carbon negative if you're willing to do that type of math, because even though we're scope 1 and 2 neutral, we still own carbon offset credits. So I'm now offsetting scope 3, which is when I travel or when machines get delivered to me, we're offsetting that. So we are really leading the way on the green initiative. And we believe that at some point there is going to be a premium paid for the clean coin. I can foresee a situation where there's going to be a green ETF where all coins are only minted for 100% carbon neutrality. Those coins will be worth more. And we believe that we'll be the front and center company that those coins will come from.
I totally agree there too. And you're probably going to say, Anthony, we just saw that big ESG report come out from TerraWulf. And I totally think you're right there, Rob. There is going to be a premium for green, sustainable Bitcoin mining. And a lot of those, we've talked to actually Hive about that as well. Green Bitcoin that hasn't been traded, hasn't been used before, is going to have a premium. Silver, similar to collectible coins or bills that haven't been in circulation and stuff like that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I fully agree.
Excellent. Well, we've covered a lot today. I've learned a lot about Griffin. Anthony, I'll kick it back to you for any closing thoughts here before we wrap up. But Rob, excellent interview and very well discussed here.
Yeah, one final point for me. We didn't cover it in the interview itself, but we've talked to a lot of the miners now, and a lot of them are moving into the high-performance computing space. Is that something that's even on your radar? Are you just focused at the moment on self-mining? And, you know, what's your views on you know, I think something like 70% of the miners that I cover are already sort of like buying the GPUs and, you know, making sort of like, you know, their position quite noticeable now that they're moving into this space in a serious way. You've got 2 or 3 at the top are only going to stay pure miners. But it was interesting even when the likes of Core Scientific, who were a big miner, big hoster, come out and say they're moving into the space. And that wasn't sort of it wasn't an expected move. But what's your view on HPC at the moment?
Yeah, so great question because it's very relevant. The one thing that we pride ourselves here at Griffin is that we're always open-minded. We will not say no to any opportunity. So we're looking. And so if for us, it's really more a matter of, again, it's always, we're a bunch of CFOs. It's all math in terms of if we do this, does it give our shareholders a better performance? And so we're looking at it, and that's something that we are investigating. The one philosophical question I have, though, and this is, I don't even have an answer to it yet, but it's something I toss around in my mind, is when an investor is buying a Bitcoin miner, do they want this other exposure? Because when you look at it, and I go back to commodities, gold companies that also had copper and silver streams don't trade as well as a pure gold company does. It's because they just mine gold. And that's just an example there. But we might have the same situation where, does anyone really want a Bitcoin miner that also has other stuff? There is value in it, but maybe you want them to have them separate. And frankly, given how hot AI is, you actually might want AI, not Bitcoin, in certain situations. Although I disagree with that. But that's a philosophical thing that I'm not sure where I land on yet. But at the end of the day, I'm responsible for my shareholders, and whatever gives us maximum return, we're doing that.
I think you're right. I think there's a point about differentiating services, and we've had Sam Tabar on the channel a few times, and they just announced probably one of the biggest HPC deals of all the miners, and it appears they're getting no recognition for it through their balance sheet at the moment, through their market capitalization, the share price. So you've probably come across a good point there, and your background sort of aligns to that understanding as well. So it's not just a throwaway remark. You've got a lot more understanding in this space than most of the people we speak on the podcast. But thanks for that, Rob.
Yeah, and actually, just to add an additional layer to that, guys, I just thought about it, is there's also a question of credibility. I don't mean this in a negative way. I'm not pointing it to anyone. But when you see companies chase whatever is hot, that sometimes is a bit of a red flag. Although I believe AI is here to stay, so I don't really think AI is that type of thing. But companies that tend to do that generally are not institutionally as the institutions don't look at it as favorably, relatively speaking.
No, thanks, Rob.
There is something to be said, though, for the pure play, sticking to your roots, and investors know what you're about and know what they're getting. And I will defend you a little bit there, Rob. I know AI is big and I know it's here to stay, but I think Bitcoin and the new currency of the planet is here to stay as well. So there's room for both. And a lot of people watching this show really are looking for that exposure to the miners and to Bitcoin. So that's it for today, you guys. Excellent interview. If you're still watching at this point, hopefully you found some value. Hit the like button. Subscribe to the channel. We just hit 43,000 subscribers. Rob, I'll give you the last word here, but excellent discussion today.
Yeah, well, just want to thank you guys. You guys do excellent work. It's a pleasure and an honor to be on this channel, and I look forward to chatting with you guys more. Thank you.
Thanks, Rob.